Advice for guests arriving for a stay at a hotel. Don't ever tell the front desk, "They told me I should ask for an upgrade." Don't talk on your phone while checking in at reception. Be sure to be polite and tip everyone, especially if you want good service, because the hotel staff has ways of exacting revenge. In fact, if you're staying in room 1212 in New York City, you have made someone very angry. Jacob Tomsky worked for more than a decade at high-end hotels, beginning in New Orleans, where he was a garage valet, and later as a manager in Manhattan. His book, Heads in Beds, is an eye-opening, funny, irreverent, even snarky account of what goes on behind the scenes at a fancy hotel. And Jacob Tomsky joins us from the NPR Bureau in New York. And congratulations on your book, and thanks for joining us.
Well, thank you, and it's a pleasure to be here.
So did you want to exact some kind of revenge on the hotel industry by writing this book?
Not particularly. It wasn't the main goal, mostly to inform. But yeah, there's definitely some things in there that seem a bit revengeful, I think.
Indeed, and we will get to all of that. But I'm wondering, after a decade of working in the hotel industry, having a variety of different jobs, does anything surprise you about human nature anymore?
Not really. I got past the point of being surprised, and then actually got to the point of maybe being bored with it, even when it came out in the form of anger and, infidelities and what have you. It was an amazing position to hold, to see so much difference, and people flip on a dime, and people one way one day and one way the next day. It's an amazing position.
You got your first job in New Orleans, actually working as a valet, right? A garage valet?
That's correct. Parking cars.
And how did you get that job?
I just randomly fell into it. I was actually, I'd just gotten out of college and I had a degree in philosophy, which didn't, prepare me for any possible job. So I got a job parking cars, and then I heard about a new hotel opening up in downtown New Orleans, and I applied for the position. I got it, and that began 10 years in the hotel business for me.
In fact, you're right. Your degree in philosophy was garbage, and I'm quoting you here, garbage stuffed inside a trash can of student loans.
Yeah.
Do you still feel that way today?
Well, I think, I mentioned it later it's had an effect on me in ways I don't really understand. And, that's why I chose that degree, because I felt like, I wanted to study something that interested me. And I think that later having that knowledge of humanity really helped me out in a position where I had to understand different people.
Well,
so
what's
helpful.
What's interesting, whether you're parking garage, parking cars, or working in a hotel, they're all, of course, those things that happen behind the scenes that the owner of a car or someone staying in a hotel are not aware of. And I know sometimes when I'm picking up my car at a garage and you can hear that sound of the wheels squealing as those cars are coming around the circle to get down there, I always wonder, what the heck is going on back there? Can you clue us in?
Yeah, we're speeding fast. We're sometimes you're in a luxury car and you kind of want to see what it can do. Also, sometimes the turns are tight and you're bringing it to speed, but you're kind of in an interesting position because if you drive very slowly and carefully, the guests begin to complain that it's taking forever for their car to come down and they're on their way to the airport and they're going to miss their flight. And if you start burning tire and really getting to it, then they start complaining that they're hearing tire squealing. So it's a delicate balance up in that garage.
Did you enjoy the camaraderie? And it sounds like there was a lot of camaraderie at the garage.
Yeah, the whole industry is filled with that. Some of the best friends I'll probably ever make in my life are at the hotel business. It's just so interesting, and it's always fresh. So yeah, there's a lot. One of my best friends actually is still, a valet down there, and we'll be friends for life.
And there's a whole etiquette about tips. Can you talk about
sure.
that? Tips in garages.
Yeah, sure. One of the tips that I would suggest is that you give a gratuity up front to the valet parker before he or she pulls away your vehicle, if possible. That way, at least you're on their mind when they get into the garage alone. But yeah, usually a dollar or two, and definitely when you come down, a dollar or two is quite nice because there's a lot of running involved, and it's we're in charge of your vehicle, so it's good to be a little generous there.
That sounds like an implied threat there.
Well, it's just I worked with, especially with the valet parking position, those employees don't tend to feel part of the larger organization and may, in fact, not work for the hotel. They may work for an outside garage. So they're the most removed from you as a guest, and they're the least likely to go out of their way for you. So it's important you know, I've seen some things in the garages, you know, employees stealing just change out of the vehicles or larger items in the trunk. You know, it just they're in a position where they care the least. So it's good to watch out for the valet a little bit.
And when a fancy car comes in, is there a temptation to test drive it somewhere?
Sure, especially, you know, when I was working at the restaurant, it was the garage, the parking deck was actually around the corner, so we got to have it taken on the streets for a little bit instead of just going right up into the garage. And you put a young kid behind the wheel of a beautiful vehicle, you know, the foot's gonna go on the pedal, and you're gonna want to get at it a little bit.
And what's the most beautiful vehicle you drove?
I don't know. I really liked, I think it was a BMW Z3, I believe.
Nice.
Those little tiny BMWs were great because you could really feel the road. You know, Lexuses and things like that were so smooth. It felt like you were driving a yacht. So especially, you know, I worked in a really tight garage with tiny turns. So having a little vehicle with a lot of go to it, and you could really feel the road. I really enjoyed driving that car.
So how did you get from New Orleans, where you first started in the hotel industry, and how did you get yourself to New York?
Well, I did some traveling. You know, I've been a writer my whole life. Maybe the philosophy degree had something to do with that. But that was always my love, and I was getting promoted, so I decided to, you know, maybe take some time off and focus on my art. So I moved to Europe, and I lived in Paris for 6 months, and then I moved to Denmark for another 6 months, and I was just writing. And then I didn't really know where to go after that. I didn't want to go back to New Orleans because I felt it'd be erasing all that I've done. So I moved to Brooklyn and started again in New York, and it was an interesting change.
Well, and the hotel, which you don't name, but you call the Bellevue, is where you worked in New York. Have people in New York figured out where you worked?
No. A lot of guesses. There's so many hotels. Even when I used, you know, when I was working there, and people would say, oh, "What hotel do you work in?" And I'd say, I'd know before I even said the name that they're going to look. I've never heard of it unless it's one of the, you know, the giants. But yeah, no one's guessed correctly yet.
Well, we can see what our listeners can come up with here. But and you've worked at high end hotels. I mean, would it be fair to say that guests at high end hotels get treated very, very well, at least to their face?
Yeah, you would want, you know, when people pay a higher rate, they're going to expect a higher service. And when I came to New York, actually, the hotel was a little bit run down, so there was a sort of a lower caliber guest there. And then there was some huge renovations, and then it was skyrocketed into, you know, the echelons of the affluent. And yeah, quite a bit is expected, especially when, you know, you're paying a huge room rate. And then in New York, you know, possibly the room's small. So where are you going to get your value? You want to get it from the service. So, yeah, a lot of expectations when these people walk into a luxury property.
And you say, and this should not surprise anyone, that celebrities are the worst.
Oh, yeah. Well, they run the gamut, just like every human being. You never really know what you're going to get. I mean, I've had divas that wanted everything in the room white, and, you know, we had to get rid of the red throw pillows and black out the windows and had, like, full-length mirrors. And then I had, you know, a hip-hop celebrity that all he wanted was the television to be PlayStation compatible. We would have bought him a PlayStation and provided him with whatever games he wanted, but he was just wanted to make sure that he could hook up his own. So it's, you know, you never know what you're going to get. So it's exciting to deal with them, but also scary.
I was intrigued that there was a guest that wanted the room digits had to add up to the number 9.
Yes.
That's so interesting. Like, I guess a lucky number of some sort.
Yeah, and it was very difficult for me because, you know, I'm not that good at math. I think I would be involved in another career
if I had
math
skills.
Yeah, I would just sit there and you know, and the added difficulty of, you know, it's not just looking for the rooms that, you know, they're not ready. They're not the rooms that add up to 9 aren't available for the right amount of days. So it's difficult sometimes to just find a room in general. Wow. And then when you add a little math problem in there, you know, you really got me stumped. So that guy, and he, you know, I would just read them out to him.
Like, because I can give you room 45 or 72.
Yeah, just like this one, until he would say, you know, the ones that he liked, that and that if it added up to 9. But yeah, strange
yeah.
cat.
Well, speaking of numbers, in my intro, I said that if you're staying in room 1212 in New York City, you have made someone very angry. Can you explain why?
Sure. Well, that's based on, you know, it happens in other cities too, I would imagine. And obviously we're trying to fill every room, head in every bed. So, you know, someone's going to go in room 1212. But basically what happens is you got people checking in and people still do not know that you need to dial out. So they will pick up any room phone at any time and they will dial 1212, trying to call a local number. And hence 1212's phone will ring day and night, nonstop, with people who don't know how to dial out. So I would use that room. Otherwise, it's a beautiful room. But I would use that room as a slight form of punishment if I needed to. And that's going to work anywhere. anywhere you can take the area code and put a one in front of it and have it sound like a valid room number in a hotel, that's going to be the situation.
And you mean the phone will ring all night long?
Absolutely. People, I mean, I don't know who's out there who doesn't know you have to dial out, but they're there and they do it. They just pick up the phone and dial. But yeah, it'll happen to you.
Your book is called Heads in Beds, and there's a hospitality reason why. What does that mean, heads in beds?
It's just the bottom line in the hotel business, getting heads in beds. I mean, it's, you know, there's all the chandeliers and the service and the bowing and the baggage and the carts and the shiny brass, but when it comes down to it, it's about heads in beds at the end of the day, and it's about numbers, and it's about money, and it's a business. So that's just a real base hospitality term there, heads in beds.
Well, in fact, you say that most hotels book to 110 capacity, knowing that about 10% of people will not show up.
Yeah, I'm constantly surprised too. I don't know who these people are who book a room and then just don't come, but there's so many no-shows. There's about a 10% no-show ratio per night on average. And so a hotel, if they really want to be profitable, they have to play the numbers game because you really want a full hotel. And with all these cancellations, you really have to overbook in order to ensure that you get there, because people will just not come and not call and not say that they're not coming. And then at the end of the night, you know, you've got 10 rooms there or 12 rooms or you know, 50 rooms. So it's always the policy is to overbook. So there's different properties take a different stance to it. And I was even at a position where, you know, I was promised by the property, we're not going to overbook. We're not going to do that. And then lo and behold, you know, right, 2 months later, you know, I come into work and it's like 127%. Occupancy tonight, and we start walking people to other hotels.
In fact, and we're almost up at a break here, you describe the fact that if everybody shows up to an overbooked hotel, someone has to be walked to another hotel. And I can't imagine that potential guest is happy about that.
Oh, no. So it's one of the most frightening things you could do as a front desk agent is begin to tell someone that they're not staying where they're standing. It can be insane. I have, you know, there was a time in my life where I was dealing with this lady and I was like, wow, why am I afraid of this woman? I couldn't remember. I was looking at her and I was like, this woman's giving me like intense fear. And I couldn't figure it out. And then I was like, that's right. 6 months ago, I walked this woman and she went absolutely crazy on me and was screaming. And I had forgotten her particularly. But then all of a sudden, you know, it was like a physical reaction. My body was like, be careful of this woman. But yeah, it can get strange.
Well, and interestingly, she came back to your hotel.
I know, they always say that, I'll never come back, and then they'll be back next week. And they're like, well.
Well, let's take a very short break. We'll get back to our conversation talking with Jacob Thomasky, and he is the author of a book called Heads in Beds, a reckless memoir of hotels, hustles, and so-called hospitality. Lines open at 1-888-477-9499. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Delaware Theater Company supports WHYY and presents a world premiere adaptation of A Christmas Carol by Charles Dickens, December 5th through December 30th. The timeless classic gets a merry retelling by Tony Award-winning playwright Patrick Barlow, the creator of Broadway's The 39 Steps. Five actors portray more than 20 characters in this highly physical reimagining of the transformation of Ebenezer Scrooge. For tickets, 302-594-1100 or DelawareTheater.org.
As the days get shorter, the air crisper, we know everyone's thoughts turn to tax deductions. There are only a few weeks until the year's end. Whether you give a general gift of membership, become a sustaining member, donate your car, or even gift your appreciated stock to WHYY, time is running out to make a tax-deductible donation. Explore the many ways to support WHYY. Call 1-888-345-WHYY or visit whyy.org/support.
President Obama is already focused on his second term agenda, and so are his supporters. They say it's time for some give back for their loyalty through tough times. So whose issues will move to the top of his to-do list and whose will get left behind? That's our political chat, and it's next time on Tell Me More.
This afternoon at 1 on WHYY.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscoane, talking about everything you do and don't want to know about staying at a hotel. And again, our guest is Jacob Tomsky, author of Heads in Beds, a reckless memoir of hotels, hustles, and so-called hospitality. He spent about 10 years working in hotels in a variety of capacities. And we'd love to hear from the hotel workers in our audience. That phone number is 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-9499. WHYY. Jacob, you spent a fair amount of time working the front desk as a manager. Is it a lot of work to be polite?
It's a skill that's developed. I was usually a front desk agent, actually. I did some manager on duty, but never. I turned down many opportunities to be a front desk manager. Very difficult job, a lot of hours. But yeah, absolutely. It's something you develop. I could put on a face that just looks a face of concern and absolute care. Meanwhile, I'm thinking about, you know, what I'm going to do after work. It's something you develop and you can just project, and you get very good at it. Very good.
Well, your book is full of, you know, amazing stories about people doing amazing things. But broadly speaking, are most people pretty well behaved when they come to a hotel?
Yeah, I would say maybe 60% of people are quite normal, and they're just, you know, ready to, you know, be nice and polite, right, and enjoy their stay. But then again, you know, that leaves a good 40% that just go crazy. Mm-hmm. There's something primal that happens when you put somebody in a position where they feel like they're in this room that they don't care about, and they're surrounded by servants, and they end up treating the room and the people around them in ways that they would never treat people in their normal life or their rooms at home or a friend's house. It's just people really, that's part of the hotel life, and that's part of the joy of staying in a hotel is that feeling of freedom and letting go and not caring about these items and having everything there for you and being waited on hand and foot. It really does affect people. It goes to people's heads sometimes. But, it's part of what hotels are all about, and that's why they're there, and that's what we do.
Indeed, and you describe it's almost, well, certainly vivid and bordering on disgusting about working as a housekeeping manager and looking in people's rooms and the kind of mess and just yuck that they had left for the housekeeper to clean up.
Absolutely, yeah. A lot of bloodborne pathogens, a lot of fluids, a lot of things left around that you wouldn't really want to leave around when you think about the fact that a stranger is going to be in there. People just get in there and just go bananas. It's crazy.
But what's interesting is that people working in a hotel do have a way of exacting, I don't know if it's revenge exactly, for everything, but I have to say, having read your book, I will never drink from a glass of water in my hotel room ever again. Can you explain to our listeners why?
Well, that one, I mean, we do have ways of revenge from mild to severe methods. But that's actually the housekeepers are responsible for cleaning those minibar glasses, and they actually are not provided with dish soap. So they'll clean them with what they have available, and that's either going to be shampoo. You fill up the sink with hot water, put the shampoo in there, and then soak the glasses, or possibly Pledge furniture polish, because they're responsible for having a streak-free glass, and you'd be amazed with a little bit of Pledge shines it up nice. It looks like a perfectly clean glass. Mm. It'll just have a little bit of a zing, a little lemon zing to it.
Well, as I said, I will never drink from a glass again.
Just wash it. Yeah, wash it. At least rinse it out if you got to.
You also describe, I don't know if this was alleged or actual, prostitutes using hotels to meet clients. And I'm quoting here, hotels, the brothels of today.
Oh, without a doubt, especially in Manhattan. I mean, it was just, you know, the bars is a great place to see them. They're always there. They're looking for, high price gets there, and they're going to find that in a hotel. You've got business travelers with a lot of money on the road all the time, maybe married, maybe not married, and this anonymous room. So you start in the bar. Otherwise, you know, you you order it from a service, and you know, a good prostitute is not going to come to the front desk. Mm. They go right up to the room number, they knock on the door, they go in, they leave, and no one has any idea that a prostitute had come and gone. So yeah, absolutely, it's rampant. I think that, you know, when they first opened hotels, that's been one of the reasons for them, mm-hmm. and it's a long tradition, and it continues as subtly as possible.
And these, of course, are, we're talking about high end hotels here, not low end hotels.
I would assume the same thing at a low end hotel, possibly less. The only thing, just maybe possibly less quiet. You know, there seems to be a sort of a secret nature, and people want to keep it a little bit under wraps in a luxury property. So I just imagine you go to a roadside motel and it's, you know,
same
banging
deal
on the door, and it's, you know, maybe more in the open.
So are there any secrets at a hotel?
Are there any secrets?
Yeah.
There are. It's, that building is made of secrets. as a front desk agent, I was in charge of people's secrets. I would be in the position, you know, not to continue with, or, you know, like I would check in, for example, a businessman, and I know, I've known him for 2-3 years, and this is his mistress, his New York mistress, that, and she would, and I would never put her name on the room, but I always was aware of her so that I could give her a key if he wasn't there or something like that. And then the next day, here he is back again with his family. And I'm, you know, putting his wife's name on the reservation and, you know, keeping my mouth shut about how much I know about what he does during the week. And, you know, that, and then just take that and multiply it, because everyone's got secrets, and everyone's got, you know, not everyone, but there's a lot of alternate lifestyles out there. And hotels are the home of anonymity. And that's one of their functions in society. So I think people use it for that, and they'll never stop using it for that. And I was eyewitness to all of it.
Sure. I mean, places to have sex, right?
Absolutely. Whatever you want. I mean, people use a hotel to, commit suicide. They use a hotel to propose. They use a hotel to, practice alternate lifestyles, drugs, try to be an artist, whatever, you know, these are places where people can go and disappear and reemerge during their time there as whatever they'd like to be. And again, that covers the entire breadth of humanity, and people want to be a lot of different things. And the hotel provides them with that ability.
Well, you describe a man who you call Mr. Hochstein, who, you know, is a regular at the hotel. If you can tell that story, but what was interesting is that we certainly find out about his sexual interests. But it seemed that once this was discovered, that the staff, they didn't judge him about it. It was just Mr. Hochstein.
Yeah. So, to tell the whole story, he was a longtime guest at the hotel, always very cold. Yeah. And, it's our job, especially with regular guests and guests that bring a lot of money into the hotel, to get to know them and welcome them back and use their name and be friends with them and whatever we can do to make them feel comfortable while they're with us. But he was resistant to all of that. And no one could ever get him to speak or be kind. He was just real quiet. And we just figured, hey, he's just a quiet businessman. He doesn't want to deal with anybody. And then he had taken all the items out of his room except for a bag. So the housekeeper assumed he had checked out. And when they threw the bag away, they found all these sex toys and, you know, all these strange, not necessarily strange, but for the man that we thought he was, some unexpected items in that bag. And he came back and found out that his items had been thrown away. And he assumed that no one knows, but, sometimes in the hotel world, we all know.
Right.
There's cameras everywhere. It's an interconnected hive of employees, and housekeepers are talking to doormen, and doormen are talking to front desk agents, and front desk agents are talking to managers, and it can spread really quickly. So he assumed that he had that anonymity, and that maybe the housekeeper had seen something, but she hadn't told anyone. Meanwhile, we were all pretty aware. But, and then on the back end, we didn't judge him,
right?
Because there's, that's not our job, but we're there to provide service, and that secrecy. And, you know, that's one thing, especially when you bring it back to celebrities, that's one thing that they count on, to not have a huge deal made of whatever happens, just to keep a calm mm-hmm. demeanor. Doesn't matter who it is, you just, and what they've done, just act as if it's normal. It's part of the job.
And that's Jacob Tomsky, our guest at Air Radio Times. We are talking about his years working in the hotel industry. He began working in a garage as a valet in New Orleans, spent a number of years working in a high-end hotel, unnamed, in New York City. And he's the author of a book called Heads in Beds, a reckless memoir of hotels, hustles, and so-called hospitality. And again, we're taking calls at 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. We'd love to hear from you if you have or do work in the hotel industry. And of course, I guess if you've ever stayed at a hotel, give us a call as well. You have a whole section on tipping. And one of the things that surprised me, and I, having been a waitress, I pride myself on being a very generous tipper. But to be honest with you, Jacob, I didn't know it made sense to tip the receptionist, or I guess the person that signs you in at a hotel. Can you set me straight on that?
Sure. I mean, it's not a tipped position, but in fact, that's why it's so effective when you do tip them, because they're getting a decent hourly wage. But when you if you offer a little of gratuity to the front desk agent, it's going to go a little bit farther than it would. It's very normal to tip a bellman or a doorman. And then the most important part about this is that the front desk agent is a very powerful position. It's undervalued and it's underrated. All that typing, it means something. We are the ones deciding your life at the hotel. We're picking your room. We're in charge of your bill. We're going to tell you, no, you can't have a late checkout. We're going to say things like, there's nothing I can do. And you know that all the rooms are the same size. And it's really not true. There's a lot of variation and there's an incredible amount that a front desk agent can do. So a well-placed gratuity at the right time can get you everything you want.
And what's the right time?
Right at the beginning. You know, that's that when, you know, you spoke about being a waitress. You know, that's it's a sad thing to tip at the end because, you know, obviously the origin of tipping is, you know, to ensure proper service or whatever. And so it's always better, especially with housekeeping as well. Tip up front. Don't promise that you'll take care of them. If you take care of them right away, then what you've done is then now they feel obligated. You know, if you give me $10, $20, I will do what I can because I feel like I need to earn it. Any decent human being is going to be like, oh, well, now I need to earn this money. And they will. There's a thousand ways that we can feel that we've earned it. And even if it's as simple as smiling at you and thinking you're a kind person and remembering your name and welcoming you back and asking you how the meeting went and, you know, asking you, if you saw a play or where you ate, you know, you're traveling and it can be a hotel can be a lonely place. And so simply just having someone who knows your name and who has your back is that right there can improve your stay. And then it just goes on from there.
You write a funny thing when I guess tipping the person at the desk, you're saying, and I'm quoting from you saying, it's not a drug deal, that you don't have to do it surreptitiously. You can do it, you know, openly and honestly.
Absolutely, yeah. You know, I had the people would give me awkward handshakes. You know, I call it the crinkly handshake, which is nice. You know, you shake someone's hand and it's crinkly. It's nice. But, you know, people just folding down 20s really small and just real awkward handshakes. And it's really not a drug deal. And it really is a good look. I don't know. I can't imagine. I've never looked at someone while they were giving someone money and been like, what's... That's, you know, thought poorly of that person. Mostly, you look really good doing that. You're like, oh, that guy's giving money. He's a nice guy. Like, wow, that guy's cool. You know what I mean? It really is a sophisticated, generous way to behave. And so there's really no reason to hide from anyone. And, you know, and if you worry about, like, the fact that it's not a tipped position and you think they could get in trouble, I mean, front desk agents handle money all day. You could be asking for change. You know, and if you really feel uncomfortable, you can put it in an envelope. I mean, I've been left envelopes. I've had gratuities mailed to my house. There's a thousand ways to do it, and it's never unappreciated.
You also write, and then I do want to get to our callers, and I didn't know this, but you describe bellman as the hotel. Said everyone comes and goes, but the bellman stays. How come?
Yeah, they tend to, it's a lucrative position, and the bellmen tend to be born and raised in that city. For some reason, you'll have someone who loves that town, and knows everything about that town, and they'll hold down that job for a long, long time. I saw a lot of, real tightened up seniority issues. So they really, you know, you can come back 5-10 years and they may have changed the carpets, they may have, you know, updated the chandeliers, you may be looking at a completely new management staff or front desk staff, but chances are the bellman and the doorman as well are going to be the same faces, and they're going to have a love for that property and a history that's hard to erase. And in that way, they create the permanent face of a hotel.
And do they make a good living in those jobs?
They do. It's a great position. You know, I was offered that position at one time, and I was instructed to be wary, because if I felt I was going to make a career in the business, taking that step towards bellman, people, once you get there, the money cut that you have to take to go back into management is so substantial that most people don't take it. So it becomes a career position. But you know, it's nothing about it is easy. You know, working, if you can imagine, 20-30 years working as a bellman, you're going to have knee problems, hip problems, elbow problems, shoulder problems, feet problems. You're on your feet all day. So there's, you know, it's a physically demanding job, not to mention, you know, knowing people and being good with people and dealing with complaints. So I would never say that that money is ill directed at that position, because it is difficult. But you know, it is a position that people hold in high regard, and when they'll never leave it.
Interesting. Let me get some callers in. It looks like we have Joan from Center City, Philadelphia, joining us on Radio Times. And Joan, go ahead. You're on the air.
Yes. Good morning.
Good morning.
I love the show.
Thank you.
Listen all the time.
Great.
And I have traveled easily and comfortably and enjoyed it all over the world for 50 years. And then, a couple of years ago, there were a lot of articles about bed bugs. And I sort of froze. And have thought recently, I think I'll stay home, or I'll go for the day, or what. So could your guest please tell us about that?
Well, I think he's chomping at the bit to tell you about that, Jonah. Go ahead, Jacob.
Yeah, that was I experienced the same phenomenon, but just behind the desk of a hotel. It was like all of a sudden bed bugs were everywhere, and you're hearing the term bed bug registry, and I've got guests coming down and showing me red spots and asking me what kind of bite this was. And, you know, I'm not a doctor. I'm a front desk agent. It looked like a mosquito bite. Maybe they scratched too hard. I don't know. So basically what was happening is there was a huge scare, but the thing is that bed bugs, you know, are everywhere. They were in movie theaters. They could have been in taxis, in airplanes, you know, as you're flying to your destination. So it was a very hit and miss. And I think there was, you know, I don't know the science of it, but it seemed to be sort of like a zeitgeist or something, that people just all of a sudden it exploded on the scene and people took a higher, you know, a closer look at it, especially when it came to hotels. But I do know that in dealing with the hotel that I was at, we've experienced very few bed bug problems. But when we did, it wasn't as if the entire place swarmed with bed bugs. It would be one room, and they would shut down that room and the rooms adjacent. And if anybody did deal with that situation, of course, they wouldn't be paying for that room and tax. And then you just bring in professionals and you exterminate the room itself and then the rooms adjacent to it, and problem solved. And you're back on the road with a bed bug free, you know, situation. But then you're checking in a guest who just came from an airport, you know, and it starts again. But I believe personally that there seemed to be a strange amount of hype as opposed to the reality of it. And now, you know, it seems to have settled down again. You don't hear it as much anymore. I doubt bed bugs have gone anywhere. I'm sure they're still out there doing their bed bug thing.
Doing their bed bug thing. So, Joan, it's safe to go explore the world. Thanks for calling into Radio Times. Let's take another short break. We'll get back to our conversation. And we've got calls coming in at 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. Talking with Jacob Tomsky. He's worked in a number of capacities in hotels for about 10 years now, and again, author of a book called Heads in Beds, a reckless memoir of hotels, hustles, and so-called hospitality. Much more to talk about after this very short break. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
The Pennsylvania Academy of the Fine Arts supports WHYY. PAFA Continuing Education invites you to join their community of artists of all ages and levels with a lineup of drawing, painting, sculpture, and printmaking classes, weekend workshops, pre-college Saturday classes for high school students, and master classes with artists. Registration is now open and classes begin January 22nd. For details, pafa.edu/CE.
Wine dates back 8,000 years, but ancient wine was quite different than the drink we know today. For one thing, it tasted pretty bad. So bad that people would add things like lead, pine resin, and marble dust to improve the taste. On the next Fresh Air, Paul Lucas talks about the history of wine. His new book is called Inventing Wine. Join us.
This afternoon at 3 and again tonight at 7 on WHYY.
I'm Robin Young. Join us next time for the news and these stories here and now. We'll hear how two presidents helped a father understand and accept his son who has Asperger's. Also, choosing a wine intimidates a lot of people. Eric Asimov, chief wine critic of the New York Times, has some tips. That's Public Radio's daily digest of news and culture here and now.
Today at noon on WHYY.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscoen talking with writer Jacob Tomsky about his book, Heads in Beds, an eye-opening, funny, irreverent, and sometimes snarky account of what goes on behind the scenes at a fancy hotel. He's worked at several fancy hotels in his career. And we're taking calls at 1-888-477-9499. We've been talking a bit about revenge. Tell us about key bombing. What is that?
I'm still waiting for another front desk agent to come out and say they've done this. Otherwise, I invented it. But basically what it is that when you check in, you're supposed to get two keys, initial keys, that are tied together. So when you get up to the room, you put them in and the lock reprograms itself and both those keys will work. So what I would do, sometimes at the request of a bellman or, you know, if a guest was being rude or whatever, then I would key bomb them and I give them two initial keys. So what happens there, they take both keys up to their room. Whichever key they put in will work and reprogram the lock to function with that key. But the second key is also an initial key. So, you know, at any given point, chances are they're going to put that second key in there. And when they do that, the first key becomes invalid as it's been reprogrammed with the second initial key. And then fast forward, another hour or two, and they'll be using that first key in the lock, getting the red light, and find themselves, with a demand to come back down to the desk and get new keys, which I could again program incorrectly.
And what would someone do in order for you to get that revenge on them?
Any number of things, bellman would request it, anybody making like racist or homophobic comments, yelling at the cab driver, yelling at their daughter, being rude to their wife, being on their cell phone the whole time, just 1,000 things, that just little nitpicky, situations. Sometimes I didn't know. I'd just have a bellman come up to me like, key bomb this guy. And I'd be like, no problem. Wow. I didn't even need to know what his reasoning was. I trusted his judgment and, I'd throw out a key bomb.
And tell us why, and then we'll get back to our callers. Tell us why bellmen hate a man named Bernard Sato.
That's the man who invented the wheeled luggage, which obviously is a wonderful invention, incredibly helpful to everyone but the bellman, who used to be the masters of the cart. And, they would be a very necessary person if you had more than two or three bags. But once they invented that wheeled luggage, everyone, started saying, oh, I got it. I can take care of it. I can take care of it. And it made the life of the bellman much, much more difficult. And I remember the situation where there was an older lady that came to stay at the hotel, and she had this beautiful old luggage, and completely wheel free, and more like a box, with like the hinges.
Sure.
And she was just revered by these bellmen. She's like, now that's a woman with class right there. Look at that luggage. There's no way she could get it 2 feet from the cab. She has to have help. And that's what it used to be like. And Bernard Sadow made everything more convenient for all of us, except for the bellman.
I hear you. Let me get Jean from Pennington, New Jersey, to join us. Hi, Jean. Go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Hi.
Hi there.
I grew up in a hotel, and I was interested in what you were saying about cons and how seems like hotels are easy marks for con people.
For con people, yeah.
Yeah, one incident I remember from my childhood was three men came and paid cash and got three different rooms, And the next morning, when the maids came in, there was no furniture.
Really?
They had stolen all the furniture and taken it out the back door. And my dad said to the night watchman, you know, didn't you notice them? And he said, oh, yeah, I asked if they needed help.
Oh, no.
I guess the people who work the night shift aren't exactly the, you know, sharpest tools in the
Well, Gene, let me see what Jacob Tomsky has to say. Did anyone ever empty a room like Gene?
Yeah, you got people, you know, stealing flat screens or, you know, and then you take it down to taking the batteries out of the remote. You know, we've had that happen. I mean, people will take anything and everything, you know, irons and glasses and robes and pillows and sheets. And yeah, absolutely. You know, and then you've got people, you know, there was a situation that I was familiar with. It was a sister hotel in New Orleans, and it wasn't very populated. And someone had been occupying a room for 2 weeks and no one knew.
Really?
He wasn't registered. He was not paying, but he had a key. He had an active key. And since the hotel wasn't dealing with a heavy occupancy situation, that room was never marked to clean. So no housekeeper was ever going there. And I think he had been in there for 2 weeks when they discovered that he had been just living rent-free. Insane.
You write about housekeepers, and I actually do want to talk about Dominique Strauss-Kahn, because it was just in the news that he settled with the housekeeper who accused him of sexually assaulting her. But you say about housekeepers that while they often are accused of stealing, they're more likely not to be stealing, or if they're doing something, they might be just snooping around and looking at your stuff. Is that a fair description?
I think, yeah, that was one of my biggest pet peeves at the front desk, was immediately accusing the housekeeper. You know, they know they're under the gun for this. They know they're in your room and they're responsible for your personal items. And if something goes missing, they're the first one that that gets leveled at for that kind of accusation. And I used to hate that, because they're very hardworking people. Mm-hmm. That's definitely the most physically demanding job in the hotel, is housekeeping. And they're not going to, you know, almost 99.9% of the time, the guest didn't bring that pair of earrings, or, you know what I mean, or left something outside of the hotel, or, you know what I mean, or didn't, you know, lost their iPod, you know, outside. I mean, it's just, but immediately they assume that the housekeeper is stealing. And really, you know, as far as going through your items, like maybe when you first start, it's kind of that voyeuristic thing, but, you know, 2 weeks, 3 weeks on the job, and you could care less about these people's personal items. You're just there to clean the room to the best of your ability, and get out of work and go be with your family. So yeah, I used to really dislike that kind of accusation.
As I said, there was just a news report that Dominique Strauss-Kahn and that hotel housekeeper who accused him of sexually assaulting her last year, they've reached some kind of a settlement. I don't think anyone knows how much that settlement is, but you wrote an interesting thing in the New York Times. This is May 2011. Writing, I've worked in the luxury hospitality business from New Orleans to New York, from valet parking to the front desk to housekeeping management for 10 years, and I know the country's 250,000 housekeepers are in a difficult position. They're often alone on a floor cleaning a vacant room, back to the door, the vacuums drone silencing all sound, a perfect setup for a horror movie.
Chilling. Absolutely. It can be a scary job, and I think that drew a lot of attention to it, because, you know, I've seen that a lot. There's a lot of robe slips and a lot of guests that seem to enjoy, you know, sexually harassing, you know, a female, you know, and she's unprotected up in these hallways. I mean, you've got the cameras in the hallways, but when you get in the room, obviously there's no cameras. So, you know, that did draw a lot of attention to that situation, and, you know, it was to talk about giving them panic buttons and things like that. But it's part of that's part of the hotel game, and it's part of the job, that when a housekeeper puts her master key in the door and opens up that door, she has no idea what's going to be inside. And usually it's, you know, just some, you know, cold fries, you know, and some trash. But sometimes it's, you know, a damaged individual, and, you know, that can be very scary. And you know, I hope, you know, she's okay. I'm sure that's been a damaging situation for her.
Indeed. And when you talk about robes, they're flashing someone or actually trying to sexually assault them.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I saw that. I've seen it myself. I've walked into rooms and seen some deliberate nudity directed at me. And, you know, it's in general, you know, I would hope it would be somewhat harmless. You know, you just quietly walk back out, you know, call them up, be a little stern about it. And hope it goes no farther. But when you know, people start to, you know, use violence, it's really, really unacceptable. And, you know, hopefully they continue to keep a focus on that and keeping housekeepers safe.
Indeed. Let me see what Charlie from Hamilton, New Jersey has to say. And Charlie, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Hi, it's Tony, but hello to
both
of you.
Hi, Tony. Sure.
My uncle was the bell captain at the Warwick Hotel in Philadelphia for over 40 years. He had that job. He turned down a full scholarship at the University of Pennsylvania to provide for his mother, went off to World War II, and took that same job when he came back.
Wow.
Because it was more lucrative than it was working in the factory. And he had some great stories, and one was, and Jacob could probably attest to this, you could always tell a person, a bell captain or a bellhop on a beach, because there's absolutely no hair on the sides of their legs from carrying the bags. They're like, it's like they almost shave the outside of their legs. I remember looking at my uncle saying, like, your legs are so smooth. He said, it's from carrying bags for 40 years.
Oh, wow, Charlie.
And he also became very close with a tenant in the Warwick Hotel who actually lived there. And sad to say, this guy, he lived there as his full-time residence. But he actually fleeced my uncle from all of his money. He invested with this tenant in the hotel, and this guy one day just disappeared, and then that was the end of that.
Oh, I'm so sorry to hear that.
He had great stories. He really did have some great stories.
Well, I appreciate the call to Radio Times. And Jacob, have you ever heard of that, that bellmen have sort of worn all the hair off their legs from carrying luggage?
That's a great one. That's an interesting one. I think that sounds like a great old school story, Tony, because, you know, that's when they, you know, before bell carts and when they didn't have wheels, so things like that. Like now there's so many ways to get that bag off your leg. But, you know, that's just awesome. And like you say about, you know, just nonstop stories, a bellman has seen it all. And it's really sad to hear about that fleecing situation, especially. Yeah, because, you know, I was hoping it was going to be a positive one because, you do develop these relationships, and especially, you know, being a bellman at the same property for that long, even if the tenant it's not a tenant that lives there. I know, you know, I'm familiar with these relationships between doorman or bellman with long-standing guests, and they're, you know, they share stories about their children, and they're always asking about each other's family, and they've met their families, and it's just it's wonderful to see that kind of relationship and solidity bloom in such a transient environment. So it's terrible what that man did, but yeah, it's anything can happen.
Thanks for the call. Let's see what Doug from Maple Shade has to say. And Doug, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Your mention of overbooking caught my attention. I had an experience many years ago, which I thought was absolutely unforgivable on the part of the hotel. It's a Philadelphia hotel. I won't mention the name. But I had reserved well in advance the bridal suite for my wedding night. And it was very expensive, but worth every penny because it was just gorgeous and romantic and everything else. And when we arrived there on my wedding night, they led us to a room. It was a big hotel. I couldn't remember where the suite was. But they led us to what turned out to be an ordinary hotel room, and, you know, which was just unacceptable. And when I went back to the desk and protested, they had the gall to pretend that they didn't even know what I was talking about when I described the suite, and even asked me if I was sure I was in the right hotel. So what I did was I wound up I went out off in search of the room myself. I found somebody on the housekeeping staff, described the suite to her. She led me to it, opened the door, and there it was, all waiting for somebody else, another couple. So I went back to the desk and I said, that's my suite, I'm taking it.
Oh, geez.
Which we did. So we did not suffer other than that initial aggravation. But the other couple that they had a reserve for, they apparently got stuck with an ordinary room. And to overbook the bridal suite for a wedding night, I just think is just over the top. And as I say, unforgivable.
Well,
you know, I'm still angry about it. And this was back in.
Well, now I'm angry about it, Doug. No, thanks for calling into Radio Times, Jacob. That seems kind of nervy, doesn't it?
Yeah, that's a horrible thing, especially when it comes to engagements and weddings. That's a focus for a hotel. And, you know, it's one thing to sort of, you know, make some mistakes for someone's vacation or someone's business trip, but you do not want to destroy someone's wedding. And that's horrible. I'm trying to postulate, like, what could have possibly happened? Because you shouldn't overbook. If it's a specialty suite, there's one of those, and you need to pay attention to, you know, you do not double book that. And, it's a different situation than you can book, if you have 100 rooms and they're all standard, you can book 110 because everyone's getting the same room. But you should definitely keep that separate for the bridal thing. I have no idea. You know, I guess in that situation, you'd want to make sure to keep hold of your confirmation number and your paperwork. And I'm glad it got solved for you to a certain degree. But I can understand your anger there. And, there's all kinds of ways to deal with it. And it sounds like that hotel really dropped the ball. And unfortunately, it does happen. Maybe it was just a double booking, poor reservation system. Somebody canceled your reservation by mistake because they had a similar name. And then they were just trying to sort of backtrack and backpedal and be like, well, we have this, we have you in this room. Could have been something like that. Sometimes reservations are canceled by the system based on, electronic choices through sales and things like that. So it's not a perfect hotel. You cannot run a perfect hotel. But when it comes to weddings, that's just unforgivable.
Doug, thanks for the call to Radio Times. Jacob, we're almost out of time here. Do you miss working in a hotel?
I do. Hopefully that comes out in my voice.
I'm excited about talking about
the bellman and the guests. It's an incredibly interesting job. It's flexible. There's bad parts about it, obviously. Working all of the holidays. I've worked Christmas morning and Thanksgiving afternoon and all of that. But it's an exciting environment, and I miss my friends. And they're all happy for me and proud of me. But when you're not in the crew, you're not in the crew. They'll forever have me in their hearts. But unless I'm standing behind that desk, I'm not part of the team, and it makes me sad.
Well, and writing is such a solitary endeavor.
Yeah. Well, I've been doing that my whole life. I had two lives. I would get up in the morning and I would write, and then I would go rock the front desk. I miss my friends quite a bit.
Well, it's been a great pleasure, Jacob Thompson. Thank you so much for joining us today on Radio Times.
Thank you for having me. I had a great time.
We did as well, and the book is called Heads in Beds, subtitled A Reckless Memoir of Hotels, Hustles, and So-Called Hospitality. Go to WHYY.org/Radio Times to find out more about this program. I'm Marty Moscowen, and the producers of Radio Times are Susan Greenbaum, Patty McMahon, Dennis Devine, and Debbie Builder, and Kevin Griffin, our engineer. Thank you so much for joining us. And do stay with us for Here and Now. That's coming up next here on